Milky Way season is finally here. I am stoked. In today's episode, we are talking about some Milky Way tips to help you take your astrophotography to the next level here in 2024. Man, where has the time gone? It's already mid-April, which means it is time to shoot the Milky Way. If you're new here, or if you're not, welcome back. I'm your host, Austin James Jackson. You're listening to the Landscape Photography Podcast. Of course, you already know that, but I'm so glad you guys are here. In today's episode, we're talking all about the Milky Way, and we're talking about some astrophotography tips. And there's a lot of things that I think trip up beginners and even people that have been shooting the Milky Way for a while. And I just wanted to make an episode covering some of those things. I was just out this past week leading a workshop of some fantastic clients in like South Central Utah in the desert where we captured the Milky Way panorama. And so I got a good gist of kind of what people may be struggling with, some things that might easily trip people up. And I just wanted to cover all that in today's episode, covering some tips, some tricks, and everything in between, some gear, all that good stuff. So if you're a Milky Way photographer, you're in the right place if you want to improve. Without waiting any longer, I want to go ahead and jump right in to our tips in today's episode. Here we go, guys. All right, let's start it off strong. We'll start off with some basics, but I'm not going to cover the super basic stuff, you know, the settings and all that. But there is a few camera settings that you want to adjust. And I'm, like I said, not going to talk about, you know, ISO, shutter speed, aperture, but there's other settings in your camera that you want to change. And I find most people don't have these changed unless someone has told them about these settings. So most cameras have a feature that you want to change, and it's called long exposure noise reduction. Essentially, what this feature does, imagine you take a 30-second long Milky Way photo at ISO 6400, so you're using high ISO, so there's going to be some noise. Your camera will take an additional 30-second exposure with the basically with nothing being allowed to hit the camera's sensor, so the sensor is blocked essentially. And then it will look at the noise in that image and use an algorithm comparing the noise with your actual light image, and it'll reduce the noise in your photo because it's essentially removing noise that is there because, you know, the camera sensor heats up or whatever it may be. It'll help a little bit, but you don't want this setting on because it takes you substantially longer to shoot your photos. So usually the long exposure noise reduction runs for the same time that the regular shutter speed ran for, which means if you shoot a 30-second exposure, it's actually going to take you 60 seconds to get an image from that exposure, which means less photos for you. If you are shooting on just a regular tripod and you're shooting untracked images, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, there's much better ways to reduce noise. You can stack the images yourself later. I understand this is another step to the process, but you're going to get much better results than using this long exposure noise reduction. And when you're stacking the photos yourself, you'll want to take multiple exposures of the same exact shot to stack later. So if you are using long exposure noise reduction, it's going to take you twice as long. And, you know, if you're taking 10 30-second long exposures, that's 5 minutes. It's now going to be 10 minutes with long exposure noise reduction. I know it doesn't sound like a big deal, but just trust me, turn this setting off. You don't want the camera to do the noise reduction for you. You want to do it yourself. So turn that setting off. Usually it's called long exposure noise reduction, high ISO noise reduction, something like that. If you can't find it in your camera's options in the menu, do a quick Google search and you should be able to figure it out, I would think. Now, the other camera setting you want to adjust is, and I'm amazed at how many, and this is just a good tip for landscapes, I guess, in general, but I'm amazed at how many people don't do this, but you want to use either 2, 5, or 10 second timer when you're shooting on a tripod, which for Milky Way, you are shooting on a tripod, let's face it. Now you want to use that. I usually like the 2 second timer, but you know, if you have the neck on your tripod up and it's not super stable, I'll use the 5 second. But you want to use that so when you press the shutter button down, you don't move the camera. It might not seem like it, but when you press the shutter and then you take your hand off the camera, there's slight movement, which is going to be picked up in your long exposure since you're shooting like you know, 10, 20, 30 second long exposure. Set the timer. It's really easy to do. You should be able to hit like the function or the info button on your camera, and it should be under the shooting mode. A lot of landscape photographers may have theirs in like single shooting or continuous shooting. Just change that to 2 second or 5 second timer. Like I said, if your tripod is pretty stable, 2 seconds fine. If your tripod is not so stable and maybe you have the neck up or it's a really thin tripod or whatever, then use probably the 5 or the 10 second timer. 5 seconds should be fine in most cases though. That's another setting you definitely want to use. Now, the third setting I have written down here that you want to adjust is the brightness of your camera's screen, which can be in a variety of different places on different cameras. But one thing that you'll notice, if you go out and shoot Milky Way photos, you look at the back of your screen, you're going to be like, wow, that Milky Way is so bright. It might even be overexposed. Let me underexpose it a little more. Then you get back home on the computer and you're like, what the heck? This doesn't look at all like what I saw on the back of my camera's screen. The reason is because when you're outside in the dark and you have an LCD camera screen, you pull up your image and your eyes are adjusted for the dark. So anything that's bright is like extra bright almost. Then you get home, you're sitting in your office with the light on or the window open, and you load your image in. And all of a sudden, when your eyes are adjusted for the light and you're looking at a backlit screen, you're going to be like, wow, that's actually kind of dark. In most circumstances, this doesn't matter if you already know the settings that you like to use that gives you good results. But for those of you that are newer out there that want to actually see what the image looks like on the back of your screen, that is going to be really, really important to do. So turn down the brightness. On my Sony a7 R4, you've got options of, you can do your brightness, you can set it to either sunny, which is what I set it for all other times. And then otherwise you can set it to, it's called like manual, and you can go -2, -1, 0, +1, or +2, depending on what you want. I set it to -2. So as dark as I can when I'm shooting those night photos. So turn down the brightness of your screen. Next setting to use, and I think this might be unique to Sony cameras. And if it's not unique to Sony cameras, it's unique to mirrorless cameras. And someone could maybe tell me if they have it on theirs. But when I posted an Instagram reel of this, a lot of people were saying, oh, I can't do this on my Nikon or my Canon or whatever. But what essentially what this is to use something called bright monitoring. It may be hard to find in the menu. I set it to a custom button on my camera for nightscapes. So it's like one of the buttons on the top. I can press it. Now, bright monitoring only works in manual focus, which is fine because we're going to be using manual at night. Essentially, what it does is it just really brightens what you're looking at in the image. It doesn't tell you, like, show you exactly what the exposure is going to look like or anything like that, but it allows you to frame out your photo. So when I'm framing up the Milky Way, I turn the bright monitoring on and I can see kind of a rough outline of, okay, that's where the Milky Way is going to be. That's where my foreground is going to be. So this just helps me to avoid, you know, if you've shot night photos before, you probably know you go out there and you find whatever you want to shoot and you take a shot and you're like, oh, it's not, the composition's wrong. Let me adjust it again. And let me adjust it again. Let me adjust it again. You keep adjusting it. And all of a sudden you've burned 15 minutes trying to just get your composition right. If you have that bright monitoring setting to a custom button, especially on your Sony, it'll help you to just dial in that composition first try. So you don't have to worry about it. Now, the last thing I have under adjusting camera settings is that you need to be prepared to manual focus. You don't want to go out there not knowing how to manual focus in the dark with your tail between your legs. If you've never shot night photos before, even if you know how to manual focus during the daytime, manual focus at night is way, way different. Now, it's not too terribly difficult if you know what you're doing. Essentially, there's two methods to manual focus. Option number one is the better option, which is to use live view. So whether you're shooting mirrorless, DSLR, whatever, set your camera into live view. If you're in mirrorless, you're always in live view. If you're shooting DSLR, you have to usually, there's usually like a big circular button on the back that brings you to live view. So it'll show you, rather than, you know, like on a DSLR, you look through the viewfinder, you're actually seeing the scene like through your eye. Whereas on live view or mirrorless, you're seeing what the exposure is going to look like. You want that live view. You're going to switch to manual focus, obviously. Then you're going to start zooming in. Now, most cameras, when you zoom in, should automatically, when you're in manual focus, they should automatically zoom in the screen. So usually it's like 5X, and then you can press again on the center button for 10X. This allows you to zoom in closer. So zoom in as much as you can. And when I say zoom, we're talking digital zoom, not optical zoom. So don't zoom the lens, just zoom your on the back of the screen. Now scroll around the scene, find a star. And if you're not seeing any stars, try adjusting the focus. If the focus is all the way at the absolute closest, you're definitely not going to see anything. So I guess first dial the focus to infinity or close to infinity, then try and find a star, then fine tune the focus. You'll know the sharpest focus is going to be when the stars are the smallest. If you can find a bright star to aim at, that's perfect. Adjust your focus, dial it in until the stars are perfectly sharp. Now, if this doesn't work, you can always do what I call the guess and check method, which takes a little bit more time, but it works pretty well. For guess and check, simply dial your focus into infinity. And infinity usually isn't truly infinity. It's usually out of focus. So dial it into infinity, take a test shot. You'll see, okay, it's a little bit blurry. Then just slightly tweak the focus one way or another. If it gets closer to in focus, you're going the right direction. If it gets further away from in focus, then you're going the wrong direction. You're going to keep doing that until your photo is in focus. It's the guess and check method. It's not the best way to do it, but that is what I would recommend. Focus peaking isn't going to help you at night. So don't think that, you know, focus peaking, I mean, it might help you a little bit, but it's not going to help you a ton. It's not going to save you. So you need to know how to do one of these two methods. And if you pay attention to where the focus is, focus on the stars rather of your lens, pay attention to where it is because it should be the same every time you go out to shoot. So on my lenses, I know that, okay, there's a little symbol on my lens that has an infinity, which shows infinity focus. And I know that if I dial it just back to the left where it's just inside the infinity, that it is going to be perfectly in focus. That saves me a little bit of time because I can just simply set the focus on the lens before I even go out to shoot. So if you're shooting Milky Way a lot or you're planning to shoot a little bit more, then you're going to want to go ahead and do that. So that's my recommendation for focus. Let's jump in to the second tip. I know that was a lot of tips, but those were all under the like camera setting box. The next tip that I have is to get a star tracker. This is the single best way to take better night photos. If you didn't know, a star tracker, once it's aligned, which you align it to the North Star, or sometimes you can align them to other objects depending on the tracker. But once it's aligned, it will spin at, I think the way that it works is it spins at the same speed as the Earth. Meaning when you put your camera on a ball head on it, your camera is spinning at the same speed as the Earth. So it's keeping the stars in focus, or not in focus, but it's keeping the stars from streaking, I guess would be a better way to put it. If you take, just on a regular tripod, no tracker, if you take a 5-minute long exposure, you'll notice the stars are streaking. Essentially, a star tracker allows you to avoid that. Now, why is that beneficial? The longer the exposure, the more light we can let in. So if we can take an 8-minute or 4-minute long exposure, we can potentially decrease our ISO, meaning a lower noise image and more detail. My favorite settings for shooting the night photo is 4-minute long exposure. Then I usually do f2.8 or f4 at ISO 800. That produces a very, very clean image, and I'm only able to do that because of a star tracker. The other benefit to a star tracker is because it allows you to open up that shutter speed to allow in more light. You don't need the most expensive camera body, the most expensive lenses that are heavy and, you know, they're 1.4s or 1.8s. You don't need all that. You can take great night photos with whatever camera you have, with most likely whatever lenses you have as well. So you don't need to go spend a bunch more money. Yes, you'll have to buy the star tracker. It's going to cost you a little bit of money, but you don't have to totally buy a new camera, buy new lenses, all of that stuff. My recommendation for star tracker, not sponsored at all, but just my recommendation of what I use and what I like. If you're on a budget, the way to go, I think, is the Ioptron Skyguider. It should be somewhere in the like $400-ish range, maybe a little bit more expensive. And you want to get a green laser for that, for polar alignment. There's tons of videos online talking about how to polar align to the North Star. I'm not going to cover that in this episode because it'd be very hard to do over a podcast since there's no video. But that is the tracker that I like. I've also heard from a podcast guest that was on a long time ago, Capture the Atlas, or Dan Zafra. I read his blog and he's got some good videos online and he's doing all things star tracking. And he really recommends the Benro Polaris, which is a digital, star tracker. So it's electronic, meaning that there's some way that you calibrate it and it aligns itself with it could be the North Star. And I hear there's other things you can align to as well. I've heard good things about that one. It is $1,000 though, and it's sold out in most places. So at least at the time of this recording, so it may be hard to get your hands on. Those are the two trackers that I'd recommend though. I will put a link for the Ioptron Sky Guider that I would recommend down below. I'll put a little Amazon link. That's my two cents on a star tracker, which leads into my next tip, which is to learn to do a blue hour blend. Now, a blue hour blend is what you're going to do when you use a star tracker, because when you use a star tracker, you're taking a long exposure of the sky, and because the camera is turning slightly, the ground is going to be blurry, so you need to essentially do a composite. That's the only way you can do it. So, that being said, you're going to have to do a blue hour blend. Now, even if you're not star tracking, you can still do a blue hour blend, people. Trust me when I say this, blue hour blend is going to make your foregrounds so much better. You're going to get a foreground that actually has detail in it. I see no reason why you wouldn't want to do a blue hour blend. You take a photo, 30 minutes before sunrise or 30 minutes after sunset. It's going to allow you to achieve a very low noise and a very highly detailed image. There is a little bit of finesse that you need to apply to do this in Photoshop. There's a few layers where you need to kind of match up the foreground and the sky. Otherwise, they're going to look like they come from two different photos, which of course we don't want. But once you figure that out, you are going to be really, really happy with the results, in my opinion. I want to take a break from today's episode and talk about a really cool opportunity if you are a beginner or intermediate photographer that is really serious about taking better photos and getting better at photography. Now, usually about 4 to 6 times a year, I teach in-person workshops around the Western United States centered around helping you become a better photographer. Now, my workshops are kept to just 5 people, which means that you will get plenty of one-on-one attention. So regardless of your skill level, whether you just picked up your first camera or whether you've been shooting for 15 years, I promise you, you're going to get so much out of it. I'm going to cater the class directly to you. Best of all, after the workshop, I'm going to add you to my alumni group on Facebook, where you can get literally weekly image feedback. We can connect at all times. When the workshop is over, it's not done. I'm still going to be your mentor. I'm going to be there to help you and become better at photography. Now, like I said, if you're serious about becoming better at photography, don't wait any longer. Register for one of my workshops this year. You can visit austinjamesjackson.com/workshops. That link will be down below in the podcast description that you can click on as well. I really can't wait to see you guys out there. All right, let's talk about editing and getting better at taking Milky Way photos via editing. I am the biggest person guilty of this. I used to spend like 6 hours editing a Milky Way photo, doing all sorts of painting with brushes and dodging and burning and blah, 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 which can look fantastic. And there is people out there that do such a nice job. However, I have found that you can create amazing images, and most of my recent Milky Way photos are so much quicker of an edit. Once I complete the blue hour blend, really there's only two other, and of course you need to fix things, but other than the blend and whatever fixes you need to make, your spot healing and stuff like that, there's really only two things that you need to do. And it amazed me once I figured this out. First things first, the white balance has got to be right in your Milky Way, especially. In my opinion, you can edit your Milky Way, I guess I would call it neutral or like honest, which would be, your Milky Way might be a little orange, your everything else is different colors because there's different colors in the sky and whatever. Or you can edit it cool, where the whole sky is blue and the Milky Way is like whitish, pinkish, orangish, whatever. If you want to make things blue, adjust the color balance of the Milky Way early on in your edit, like before you blend it, just make it blue. It'll be way easier than trying to add it on later. And so that's the first thing you need to get right. You need to make sure this matches the foreground, obviously, or else it's going to look a little weird. Now, the second thing, I am amazed at how much you can do with a simple curves adjustment. Bring it into Photoshop or in Lightroom, create a selection of just the sky. Make sure it's just the sky. It's really important. And simply create an S-curve on the Milky Way. And like, it's amazing to me just how easily you can really, really make your photo look fantastic just with a simple curves adjustment. S-curve, it's all you need. Of course, there's other things you can do, hue saturation and stuff like that later on. But just set yourself up on the right foot, do a curves adjustment, make the white balance right, and you will be in the right ballpark, in my opinion. Like I said, there's tons of other editing things you can do. I like to do a little star reduction. I've got some tutorials on my YouTube covering that. But if you just do a curves adjustment, you're already going to be in great, great shape. All right, last but not least, if you really want to take great Milky Way photos, you either need to go out with somebody that's obsessed with planning, or you need to become obsessed with planning. The reason is you obviously, well, maybe this, actually, I shouldn't say obviously. You might not know this if you don't shoot Milky Way, but you can't just go out any night and capture the Milky Way. You need it to be a certain time of year. So here in the United States, and I think most of the Northern Hemisphere, that means it's going to be like March through October, November-ish, is when the core of the Milky Way is visible. And not only that, you also need to pay attention to the moon. So the moon can't be super bright. In fact, I prefer 25% or less moon in order to capture the Milky Way. So when you think about it, that really gives you like a week, a month that you can shoot the Milky Way. Then, of course, you have to think about the weather, you have to think about the location, and you have to think about the direction of the Milky Way. So this time of year, in the early spring, the Milky Way starts in the east, kind of southeast, and it moves south, like towards south direction in the sky. And as the year goes on, it kind of goes more south, southwest, and then finally west. So you need to keep that in mind when it comes to compositions. You can't just go out and assume that any good composition is going to work at night and it's going to face the right direction. There's some great apps out there, like Photo Pills is one that I personally use and I really like, that have like augmented reality. So when you're in the field, you can see where the Milky Way is going to be. And there's some tools on the map that you can use to plan that as well. Again, this isn't going to cover all that in this episode because it's just so much that we would need to talk about to cover that. But check out Photo Pills if you are really interested in shooting the Milky Way. So become obsessed with that planning. Figure out the time of year you need in order to get a certain shot. And then, of course, predict the weather. Like I've mentioned before, windy.com or Windy app is a great place. And that's windy, just like the wind, W-I-N-D-Y. That's a great place in order to find forecasts for clouds by the hour and all that good stuff. So that really covers my Milky Way tips that I had for you in today's episode. All right, guys. Well, hopefully that was helpful for you. Just a few of my favorite tips that I think are maybe a little unconventional, maybe ones you haven't heard of before. Now, I know I mentioned it a little earlier in this episode talking about my workshops, but I did just want to bring it up one more time, especially as it pertains to Milky Way photography. Many of my workshops have a Milky Way component to them, and I think if you are really serious about improving and learning Milky Way photography, I think that it is an incredible investment for you to make to come out with me. At all my Milky Way workshops, I've got star trackers set up, so I'll show you how to use it. If you have your own star tracker, you're welcome to bring it. I'll show you how to use your own. We'll get you set up. We're going to get you some great shots, but most importantly, we're going to help you become a better photographer. The Milky Way process is quite a bit more complicated than taking photos during the day. Obviously, not only the taking photos aspect of it is complicated, but the editing aspect can be a little challenging as well. So I talk about all that on my workshop. So if you guys are really serious about improving, I think there's no better investment to make. And I do still have a few spaces available on this year's summer workshops. The workshops remaining that I have that include the Milky Way are the Southern Oregon Coast and the Redwoods, as well as Mount Rainier National Park. Both are fantastic, and I think they're great. I don't want to talk about this anymore. I don't want this to be a huge advertisement or sales pitch to you. But if you are serious, you want to get on the fast track, and you have a little bit of time, a little bit of money, I think it's a great investment to make. Again, thank you guys so much for listening to the Learn Landscape Photography Podcast. It really helps me. If you leave me a review, if you subscribe, if you rate the podcast, whatever you do, I appreciate it. But thank you guys so much. We will see you guys next week. This is Austin James Jackson signing out.